So you're back with Voices from the Frontlines with Damon Azali and Manuel Criollo. And on the line right now we have Sunita Narain, who's the Executive Director of the Center for Science and Environment in India. Sunita, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So we're going to talk a little bit around kind of this, what the Kyoto Accords are, because we're kind of getting the stair-stepping for the meetings that are actually going on in Montreal right now.
Uh-huh.
And so what I wanted, I guess the first question that I had for you was if you can just talk about what are the basics around the Kyoto Accords in terms of their requirements right now.
Well, just as a quick background, as you know, with the world being very worried about what to do with climate change, it's been discussing how it could limit the greenhouse gas emissions. And the Kyoto Accord was what it devised as a way of countries being asked to limit or reduce their emissions of greenhouse gases. And the accord really does two things. One, it gives each country a target to reduce its emissions, and that's particularly for the industrialized countries who have, have been very much responsible for greenhouse gas emissions. And two, it also says that, as in their effort to reduce their emissions, they can also trade. So they can trade within the industrialized countries. They can also trade with the developing world, in which they can invest in emission reduction in the developing world by investing in better projects there and get the credits in their balance sheet. So it really does two things, but the critical thing with Kyoto is that it is an effort, a cooperative effort of the world to reduce emissions.
Hmm. We're talking to Sunita Narain, and she's talking to us from India. Well, let's talk about the top world polluters. I mean, can you give us the percentage of emissions that, let's say, the U.S. emits in comparison to China and India?
Well, the U.S. is really about 25% of the world's emissions
mm-hmm.
on the whole. And if you look at it on a per capita basis, because that's a good way to measure emissions, U.S. has about 5 to 6 tons per person. On the other hand, India as well as China are still, and they're increasing their emissions, but they're still less than a ton.
Less than a ton. And then if we look at also, I'm assuming, nations like Australia and Canada, two countries that haven't wanted to sign, what's been the percentage of the emissions from greenhouse gases on their part?
Well, Australia is also a significant part of greenhouse gas emissions.
Mm-hmm.
You see, the most important thing to understand is not just what the emissions are today, but the entire issue is that for the last 150 years or 200 years, as countries have industrialized, as they have increased their economy, they've had to pollute.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that pollution that is still in the air, because in some senses, it's what is called the grandfathering effect. These emissions are still in the air. These are the emissions that have, over the years, have accumulated to lead to the kind of impacts that we are seeing today. And which is why Kyoto and climate change is all about saying, we have one atmosphere, this is a common space. If countries have emitted and have polluted it, there are other countries who should have some rights also over the global atmosphere.
So we're speaking to Sunita Narain all the way from India, which is why the connection is a little bit fuzzy. We're going to ask Sunita if you could speak up just a little bit so the listeners can hear you.
Okay.
So one of the interesting things that I found out was that the Kyoto Accords are based on 1990 pollution levels and talking about a 5% reduction from there. That's correct, right?
That's right.
And so then since then, the U.S. has basically increased its its emissions by about 1.5% each year. So when we're actually talking about this actual net reduction, it's much more than 5% of what we currently use in the U.S. It's more like 20 or 25%.
Absolutely. And that's, I think, what's very worrying for the entire world is that, you know, Kyoto itself was very little. Too little, too late is what we said when Kyoto was signed. A 5% reduction at 1990 levels was still too little to avert global warming. But yet it was all that could be done at that stage because, you know, obviously cutting emissions is tough. For countries to change their ways of doing things is very tough. But that is why it was agreed, okay, let's start with a small target, but we will definitely meet this target. Now, with the U.S. walking out of Kyoto, and not just walking out of Kyoto, but actually increasing its emissions over the last 10 years since 1990, and of course, the projections are that by 2012, when the first phase of Kyoto ends, the U.S. would have increased its emissions by, say, around the figures I have seen are something like 20% higher than what it was in 1990. You're really talking about a devastating impact on the Earth. And you're seeing it today when it comes to news about the Arctic. You're seeing it today with the kind of intensities of weather changes that are happening across the world. And, I mean, I think this is really something that scares us now and deeply concerns us because unless we can bring some changes, we are in big trouble.
So that actually, that's talking about the Arctic. That's one of the questions that we were trying to figure out earlier today was that since U.S. is... I mean, the biggest polluter, right? 25% of the world's pollution, only 6% of the population of the world. But it's not limited to inside the U.S. The U.S. has multinational corporations that are polluting all over the globe, as well as if we even just talk about what is happening in the war against Iraq right now. So I guess the question that I have is, are in terms of the emissions, how are they counted? Are they counted as what is emitted per, like, landmass in terms of, like, the U.S., or if the U.S., like, say, shale oil or whatever is polluting in Nigeria, are those kind of pollution emissions, is that counted as Nigerian? Is that the Nigeria's problem to actually take care of?
That's a good question, but it's not so complicated. What the world does right now is rather simple. What it says is that what each country pollutes in its own landmark, and then what it does is to, you know, what the Earth has is a natural cleansing ability. It's, you know, the oceans, the trees absorb climate carbon dioxide. So what is calculated is to say this is the, each country is polluting so much. These are the Earth's natural cleansing systems which are cleaning up so much carbon dioxide. This is what we are polluting over and above that, and this is what makes the difference. So it's really about each country, but I think you're very right. At some point, really, we should be extending it to where the countries are polluting in other countries as well, but that hasn't happened as yet. That goes into Nigeria's account.
Right. So then in terms of right now, where is the U.S. in terms of Kyoto? I know there's this push to get them to sign it. Is that actually doable? I guess let me step back, because the Kyoto Accords are actually over in 2012, what are the things that in terms of the U.S., what are the sticking points, what are the loopholes they're trying to put in so that if they would sign it, they would have all these kind of escape mechanisms?
Well, you know, the U.S. is actually, now that we are understanding it better, we understand what it does. And actually, Kyoto is just so full of loopholes that even as an environmentalist and somebody deeply concerned about it, I would say it's not worth the paper it's written on, but it's all we have. And the loopholes were put there pretty much by the U.S. when I've been part of the negotiations for the last 10 years when Kyoto was being negotiated in every conference, you know, one more loophole, one more nail in the coffin of Kyoto came in. But today, with the U.S. walking out, essentially there are two concerns that the U.S. administration has voiced. One, it has said that limiting greenhouse gas emissions would essentially compromise its own lifestyle, its own way of life, and therefore it is not prepared to sign such a treaty. And two, it has said that, you know, it will not sign this treaty because it does not ask India and China to also sign the treaty. And the administration and, you know, your president has called it the fatally flawed protocol, saying that India and China are let off the hook. Now, the problem is he doesn't understand that, you know, India and China were deliberately let off the hook because they have the right to increase their emissions because we're talking about global emissions. Now, that's really where Kyoto stands today, and the entire effort in Montreal will be to try and break down this treaty to destroy it even further. And the Europeans are helping in that as well. The U.S. essentially wants no legally binding agreement.
So you're listening to Voices from the Frontlines with Damon Azali and Manuel Criollo, and we're on the phone with Sunita Narain, who is from the Center of Science and Environment in India. And I guess the final question that I have before we go to the next segment is, in terms of Kyoto, if the U.S. were forced to actually sign it, or the ones who are all the countries who have already signed and ratified it, what are the enforcement mechanisms of it? If people don't reduce their gases emissions by 5%, is there any kind of consequence to that?
Well, I think that's what I said. Kyoto is full of loopholes. The compliance mechanism that has been put into place is relatively weak. But yes, it is a legally binding agreement. It's an internationally legally binding agreement. So the world will come up with certain ways of limiting it. But I think the more important thing for us to understand is that this is not about pieces of paper. This is no longer about some numbers which are being juggled up and down. This is really about the impact of climate change. And I think it's very important for us to understand two things. One, that the impacts are beginning to show. The scientists have constantly told us that global warming will not come only by the increase in temperature. They will come by changing weather patterns and by intensities of weather events. You're beginning to see more cyclones, more hurricanes, more typhoons, more floods, more droughts, and you're beginning to get the news on the Arctic. It's very worrying. Two, it's very clear that this is one convention in which you cannot bully, you cannot coerce. You need the cooperation of all. And I think that is really where Kyoto and the climate debate is so different from, say, even the Iraq war. You can't go in and just decide to do something. You have to work with countries. And that's what the U.S. has to do. It has to work with the world on this. And that's what I expect, good leadership from the U.S.
So we've been speaking to Sunita Narain from India, where it's very, 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 very early in the morning, and we want to thank you for joining us over the phone, and good luck with your continued work.
Thank you very much.